This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. I'm gonna have to stop my little Android thingy. Oh, no. Hold it. Okay. So, there you go. It didn't come up like I thought it was gonna come up. I have to remember what the magic combination was on there. Anyways, it's been a good week. We've gotten a lot of things done. We did take a little detour at the beginning of this week because we had a dear family friend, Cliff Searcy, who had died, and his funeral was in Branson on Monday, so I just took the day off, and my wife and I went down to the Branson, and we went to his funeral. It was a lovely funeral, and a time of rejoicing, and time of celebrating his life, and it's just very, very good. It's really interesting, because sometimes, you know, funerals kind of are a time when you go to them and you sometimes listen and you think, wait, are you talking about the same person I knew? But in this case, much of what was said was like, yep. Now, having said that, we all have our challenges in life and we all have our hiccups and our drawbacks and our experiences and our benefits and our glories and all those things. But, you know, Cliff was a good man, very intelligent man, and he accomplished a tremendous number of things for a whole lot of people. And so that was reflected in his funeral, and it was good to go. And in fact, it was very, very good to go, because I was able to get reconnected with a mutual friend. And in fact, I'm having breakfast with him tomorrow morning. And it has been someone who has crossed my mind, who I've wondered how he's doing, and like that and like that and like that. And so, yeah, I really, when Lynette first mentioned the funeral, there was an initial hesitation because it is a day away from work and that gets expensive for me. Because to make up that time is very difficult the way my schedule is. And so it's just a loss. But in the process of doing that, it became clear very quickly during the funeral that it was a worthwhile thing to do. And so It's good. Things are going well at work. We are finishing up, have just a few more small things to take care of before we've got our testing for the database migration that we're going to be doing. One of our major servers, we're moving that. That's always exciting. So that's good. The writing is going fine. I have one more week after this weekend. I'm going to take one more week to do the writing. The goal would be to get to 90,000 words. And I'm at 78 something now, so that should be fine. I should be at 80,000 words by this weekend. I am on track. No. Tonight. Yes. Tonight I have 600 words ish or so to do, but all things being equal, I should be able to get that accomplished. We do not have small groups, so that's good. And then over the weekend, 2,000 tomorrow and 2,500 on Saturday, but everything's flowing. It's all good. I think I kind of know where I'm going. I don't have the epilogue yet, but we'll get there. I have lots of twists and turns in plot that I'm thinking about at this point. And we'll see how all of this plays out. Yeah, so we'll see. It'll be fun. So that's going well. Costumes are going fine. Tomorrow is Memorial Day. And I did just a couple of little modifications for Memorial Day. I ordered some flags that were 8 inches by 12 inches. The dowel rods were a little bigger than I was expected, but hot glue. Hot glued them on my hat. So now I have 6 flags on my hat, and I have 6 more flags that I'm going to do something with. And I may try to turn them into something like a Wolverine hand thing. And we'll see how that goes. So that's a little project for tonight. If we get it done, great. If we don't get it done, that's just fine too. So all is well there. I did finish my boots for National Nude Day, so that's good. I have more things to do there, but the boots were, that was kind of a big deal to get those done. There was lots of intricacies. I have some gloves to make, I have a hat to cover, and then I have to actually do one modification on the bodysuit, and then I think I'm good. And then the only other thing I really would like to do before National Nude Day is I would like to get my weight back down where it should be. I have let it just sort of stay floating, 5 pounds-ish over where I like to be, and I think I've got myself a new set point there, and I just need to push that back down. So I stepped on the scale this morning. It was 174. That really should be somewhere around 169, at least, preferably 167, although I haven't seen that for a while. But if I can get that back down to 169, I think I'd be content. So, you know, 5-ish pounds, 7-ish pounds, somewhere in there. It's just too easy to let this stuff climb up. It's just too easy. And as I think I've mentioned before, I'm thinking that maybe this fasting for 40 plus hours twice a week, yeah, I think my metabolism has slowed down a little bit, which is not bad, excuse me, when it comes to health span and lifespan and that sort of thing. But in terms of, like, keeping the weight regulation under control, as I would prefer it, yeah, maybe there's a little something there, that has to be contended with. So, we'll see, working on that. This week, a friend sent me an interview with Jay Bhattacharya, for the podcast Uncommon Knowledge. And I know I've talked about Jay Bhattacharya before. And I know I've shared his interview with Jordan Peterson and some of the things that came out of that interview. But there were some additional details that came out in this podcast that I had not heard him say before. At least I didn't recall him saying before. And I thought it would be good just to put a stake in the ground at this point and to wonder what exactly is going to come of all this information. Is there actually going to be any reversal? Or any backtracking or any acknowledgement that, in fact, the way the COVID pandemic was handled was less than optimal. For instance, in the same vein, we have the Dunham Report that clearly comes out and says that the FBI were not operating optimally. But is that going to make any difference? Is it just a shoulder shrug and the FBI saying, oh, well, but we made some changes. And, you know, so that's all fixed now. So there's no problem with us now. Really? Really? Did you make any changes, or did you just find a sacrificial calf and get rid of those people and then say, ta-da, everything's great now? So, I have that kind of same feeling with the whole COVID pandemic. What I've seen is excuses. What I've seen is people retiring. What I've seen is people who should know better by now sticking to their guns, making the same statements, speaking with as much confidence as they have ever had that they were absolutely right in everything they did, when in fact there have been studies and revelations and sadness all up and down the pike. So I know that I've talked about COVID and quite a bit, but I really, just for posterity, want to put some stakes in the ground, just so that in the years to come, if this makes it that far, I can kind of maybe go back and review and say, okay, what was I thinking in 2023, in May of 2023? And was I thinking the things that I remember I was thinking about all this? Because it's one thing to say, you know, I never really liked that idea. And having said, say that at the time of the idea, and it's something else to come behind it and say, oh no, well, I never said that, when in fact, that's completely opposite of what I actually said. So this is a way for me to get stuff on record. So bear with me. So Uncommon Knowledge, which is on YouTube. It's a podcast that has been going for some time. And I find it enjoyable. Jay Bhattacharya was on that. And Jay Bhattacharya has been on the podcast before, and so there was a little bit of recapping of what was said before when he was on the podcast and how that some of that still applied. And then there was additional things that they discussed that I had never heard Jay Bhattacharya say before. And I think those things are important. So, having said all that, then, you know, what are those things? So, I have made it home. I have made it home. And I'm in the garage. And I can read my notes now. I can try it. Okay, I had dropped by the church to check out, to make sure that the sound system was all set up for Sunday, and one of my associates had already been there and got it set up, yada yada, yay, yay, yay. Anyways, so this is from the Hoover Institute. It's, you can find it on YouTube. The name of the actual video is The Man Who Talked Back, : Jay Bhattacharya on the fight against COVID lockdowns. So the interviewer said, beginning in March 2020, just over 3 years ago, public health officials locked this country down. One man talked back, arguing that public health officials were getting the fight against COVID all wrong, and that got him into trouble. And he's still in trouble today, Dr. Jay Bhattacharya on Uncommon Knowledge Now. Okay, so they do a little review of Jay Bhattacharya. He came to Stanford University. Stanford University, that is not a fringe college. It's Stanford University. At the age of 17, never left. In addition to getting his undergraduate degree, he earned a doctorate from the Stanford Economics Department and an MD from Stanford Medical School. Okay, so he is a medical doctor with a doctorate as well in economics. Okay, this is not a fringe person. Right now, he's a professor of medicine at Stanford and a fellow at the Hoover Institute. Jay is also one of the three authors of the Great Barrington Declaration. And that Jay and his two co-authors wrote in October of 2020 that they had grave concerns about the damaging physical and mental health impacts of the prevailing COVID-19 policies. So last time he was on the podcast, which was October 13th, 2021, he had asked him, "What do you think needs to happen?" And Jay Bhattacharya had said he thought that what needed to happen was that the first thing is that the public health officials should apologize to the public health establishment in the United States and the world, and that the public health establishment in the United States and the world has failed the public, and the first thing they should do is apologize. Of course, they're not going to apologize. They're not even going to pretend that they did anything wrong. So, it's interesting because we're putting out studies, and we put out those studies even now and say, just whitewash everything and say, okay, yeah, that's fine. Now, an unusual study that put out that was not whitewashed, well, that was actually from Johns Hopkins, and they performed a survey of the literature on lockdowns. And we're defining lockdowns here as governmental mandates, such as policies that limit internal movement, close schools and businesses, and bend international travel laws, close quote. The conclusion of the Johns Hopkins study was that on average, lockdowns caused a reduction in COVID deaths of only 0.2%. 0.2%. So the problem is that when you look at the magnitude of the protective effect of the lockdowns, if it's truly very close to zero, then you have to also look at what are the costs. And this was sorely lacking in the whole COVID response. Most of what the COVID response was, well, we should probably do this because this is going to be beneficial, so we should do this. And then when their dire predictions didn't come true, then it was like, well, that's because we did that. Okay, no, I don't think you have any evidence that shows that masking actually helped anything. And by the way, there are all these other studies that say that it doesn't. But no, it did. It did. That's why we all have to mask, even outside. No. So what Jay Bhattacharya says, which I absolutely agreed with, said that if it were to benefit anybody, it would have benefited members of the laptop class who actually had the wherewithal to stay home, stay safe, while the rest of the population that serve them, because our societies are deeply unequal, it's a very fraction of the world population that could actually stay home and stay safe. So when the lockdowns happened, a very large number of people essentially were left on the outside, and they had to work to feed their families, to take care of, elderly parents, et cetera, and whatnot. And that meant that the lockdowns had no chance of actually working for those people. I remember early on when they announced the lockdowns, I was talking to my friends, and I may have said this on the podcast. What are we doing? Because, oh, we're just going to lock down all the restaurants. What are the servers in these restaurants going to do? How are they going to earn a living? Oh, we're going to give them some money because that will take care of it. What? And it's only going to be 2 weeks. Okay, well, then 2 weeks comes and goes, and it just keeps on. It's like, what in the world? So he says the problem is that when you take the very minimal impact and effect that the lockdowns had on slowing COVID, and then you look at the costs, what Jay Bhattacharya was saying is what we do know is that they're tremendous and we're still just beginning to count them. So domestically, for instance, I think there's now a broad consensus that the lockdowns harmed our children. In many cases, including California, children did not see the inside of a physical classroom for a full year and a half, and the consequences of that played themselves out with deep learning losses. And by the way, it's concentrated in minorities and poor populations who did not have the wherewithal to replace the loss in classroom learning. Okay, because my grandkids, well, they were just fine. Because Grammy was here, we were here, their parents could watch over them while they were doing their laptop schooling. I remember, you know, coming out when we were locked down and I was working from home and Clara and Asher are sitting there at their laptops, we're watching over them, they're actually getting work done. But is that the case for most? No. No. Because those parents who can't afford to be home, who have essential jobs, are now going to work. Their children don't have any schooling to go. It was horrible. It's terrible. So he said, what you see play out in a long period of time, the social science literature from before the pandemic had documented in detail about how valuable investments in education are for the health of children. If you deprive children of education for even a short amount of time, it turns out it leads to a lifetime of lower income. Health, even shorter lifespan. One estimate from early in the pandemic published by one of the editors of JAMA Pediatrics found that just the spring lockdowns in the United States alone cost our children 5.5 million life years in expectation. That's yet to come, but it's coming. And the toll on skipped cancer screenings, we're just starting to see, but it's the full extent of what is yet to come in the poorer parts of the world that have been absolutely devastated, something like 100 million people thrown into dire poverty, and that's at $2 a day or less of income. Millions of people in India and Africa. You name the poor country, and you name the poor people in the poor country, the lockdowns harmed them. And the estimates from the World Food Program is that 100 million people were put into dire food insecurity near starvation. And he said, we haven't yet begun to count the deaths, but it's going to be in the millions, and that children in poor company, I'll take Uganda as an example, is that they don't have Zoom school, and they just had no school for 2 years. Unless, again, they're in the laptop class, relatively small number of them. 4.5 million Uganda kids never came back to school after 2 years out of school, and it turns out that many of them, especially the little girls, were sold into sexual slavery or were married off as child brides, and many of the little boys were put into child labor. Their families were so poor they had faced this terrible choice between starving their kids or prostituting them. So we're in a situation where the harms of lockdown have become and are becoming clearer every day. And the benefits in terms of protecting people from COVID, it's becoming clear that none of that million, I think 1.2 million people who died of COVID in the United States, you have nearly 7 million worldwide. Those are official estimates. And I mean, what benefits did the lockdown actually have? Yeah. So, I mean, now is anyone going to say, wow, we really got that wrong, who are a part of the official decision makers? No. Not going to say that. They're just going to say, well, we did what we had to do, even though people at the time were saying this is a bad idea. Well, it doesn't matter. We're the bureaucrats. We're going to make the decisions. Then the other thing that was really interesting, and why this is interesting, is that you see early on this closing of ranks. It's like when we were talking about the doctor who helped Robert Malone helped invent the mRNA vaccines. And he and his wife had written a book. He had helped his book about what to do about COVID and, you know, interventions that had nothing to do with vaccines. And early on, they published it in like February of 2020, and they were going to go back and update it and discovered that it had been taken off the shelf by Amazon. And they're like, why did you take this off the shelf? And Amazon couldn't give them a reason. Oh, it just violated our community standards. Okay, what violated? Well, we can't tell you that, but it violated our community standards. Early on, things are forming up to manipulate and to put opinion in a certain place and close down voices. So one of the things they did early on, Jada Bhattacharya did, is they did a zero prevalence study. And I actually remember this coming out. It got just a dust up, a little bit of information, and then it was like, pfft. So they put together this volunteer study to go out and just do blood tests on people. And they got volunteers, bunches of volunteers, to try to figure out, okay, so what is the prevalence of COVID at this point? It's early on they're trying to do this. I think like April of 2020. So they go and they like test 3,000 people. They put this together and they use test kits that they had gotten from the NBA, who had gotten them from China, et cetera. And they said, we understood that these test kits might render some false positives. We knew that. We factored that in. We guesstimated that we were somewhere around 0.5% is where we would fall. And so we built into the algorithms that we might have had as much as 0.5% false positives. So they put this all together. They run all the numbers, and in their study, what they found is that there were far more people infected in Santa Clara County than were officially recorded. At that time, the World Health Organization was saying that the mortality rate was 3 or 4%, which is pretty high compared to flu. They were scaring people with this 3 or 4% thing that it was, you know, because what, flu is 0.1 or 0.2, something like that. And so they were just, you know, what they found was that far more people had had COVID because they had the antibodies than were being recorded. In other words, people had COVID. It was like, you know, a bad cold, they recovered, they went on, they didn't recognize it. Some people were asymptomatic, painted a far different picture about what COVID was. And what they came up with was, after testing these 3,000 people, what they came up with is they had about 50 people who tested positive. And they've recalculated and figured that the mortality rate was somewhere around 0.2, which is drastically different than 3 or 4%, and that it was stratified, that it was people with comorbidities, that it was older people, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So they put this study together in 2 or 3 weeks' time, and they think, oh, this is going to be great. This is good news. This is good news. They put it out, and there's like this backlash. And one of the things that happens is that somebody who's working on a COVID test there at Stanford, he said, well, we don't really trust the results that came from your test kits. And so, you know, we think your numbers are inflated. And it's like, okay, so Stanford makes them retest all these people. They retest the 50 people, and 15 of them don't actually have the antibodies. Okay, well, they already knew that probably they were going to get some false positives. So then what happens is they make the claim, this guy who has this test, he publishes this claim and he says, oh, see, there were 50 positives from that test, but we showed that 15 were false positives. Therefore, they had an error rate of 30%. So the study's no good. But the math is wrong. The math is obviously wrong. Because those 50 positive results were the result of doing 3,000 tests. And so if the 15 false positives were wrong, it's not 15 out of 50. It's 15 out of 3,000. This is very simple math. And what it did is that pushed that down to about 0.5% false positives, which they had already accounted for. But then everybody just said, oh, that study's junk. That study's junk. And it didn't matter that there were other studies that were coming out that were saying, whoa, you know, you're 3 or 4%. It's not 3 or 4%, but they just kept pushing this. Look how high the mortality rate. Everybody has to be afraid. Everybody has to lock down. This is going to kill millions and millions of people because the mortality rate's so high on this thing. It was never that high, ever. But the bureaucrats were just pushing this. And of course, the next thing that happened is months later, Jay Bhattacharya got together with two other very well-respected scholars, and they put out the Great Barrington Declaration. And basically, it just said, we need to stratify our response. We know who's vulnerable. Let's protect those people. Let's get everybody else back to work. And Francis Collins famously, now from his emails, wrote to Anthony Fauci and said, we need to have a quick and devastating published takedown of this premise. These are the people who are supposed to follow the science. So we don't agree with what you're saying. We don't want any discussion on it. We just need it taken down. And they labeled them fringe scientists. And so they used the power of government and the power of the publicity of government and the power of all the media marching in lockstep to them to vilify three respected scientists who made a very reasonable proposal. And it seems like at this point they have a ridiculous number of people who have signed on to the Great Barrington Declaration, doctors, scientists, you know, scholars that have signed in and said, yes, this is the way we should have handled this. And they still just like, oh, that's just fringe. It's just fringe. You know, so it's really, really fascinating. And he said, what's interesting is he said, He said the Barrington Declaration wasn't actually a fringe idea, and in fact, it was standard policy for how to manage respiratory virus pandemics that we'd followed for a century. And he said, if you go back to March of 2020, you can see op-eds in the New York Times and the Washington Post and elsewhere by leading epidemiologists that look all the world like the Great Barrington Declaration. It's the least original thing I ever worked on in my entire life. But he said, what you have is you've got Anthony Fauci and you've got Francis Collins that had a PR problem because prominent scientists were saying what these guys are doing is not the right strategy. And that normally should have led to a debate and a discussion of some things. But because if you're going to implement this policy as devastating as a lockdown, you really need to have a scientific consensus, and it's not okay to not have that. But for whatever reason, for whatever the motives were, for wherever the push was coming from, something happened early on in the pandemic response, and everything got focused to one thing, and one thing alone. You catch COVID, you go home, hope you don't get to the point where you can't breathe. If you do, we'll put you on a ventilator in a hospital, and 50% of you are going to die. Mm-hmm. As opposed to just taking the interventions and paying attention and looking at optimal other alternative treatments. As simple as everybody needs to take vitamin D. I mean, this whole thing is really fascinating. And it really feels like that there was far more than just a greedy profit motive because of the way everybody got in lockstep in the media and in governments and in World Health Organizations. And in, I mean, everybody just got in lockstep. And we're paying and we're paying and we're paying for all of this. And honestly, we're going to keep paying because nobody's figured out yet why we have so many excess deaths still to this day. This is Phil Farrand, and I have made it home.